Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their career. In this episode, we will be learning from Swati Dasgupta, Director of National Grid. Swati, could you take a few minutes to share your story and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. So let me back up a little bit. I went to business school at MIT. I graduated from there. In the first 10 years of my career, I worked in tech. And I really didn't have corporate venture in mind. The market wasn't as developed yet. So I started in corporate finance in a technology company at Digital Equipment. I went to product management soon after. So I was a product manager for disk drives, then PCs. And then I moved to microelectronics at IBM and semiconductors. So in 1999, I was at IBM Microelectronics, and you know, the market, startup market, was really strong at lots of investment in internet and e-commerce, networking, semiconductors across the board. And we were looking at all the software companies in the network process area coming out, and we were thinking acquisition, is it going to be a partnerships? And for example, Intel was also going into that segment. And Intel Capital is actually investing, and they were investing around the core chip, and they were actually expanding their investments into software, into web hosting, and things like that. So what was that about? We were asking ourselves. And what should our strategy be in corporate venture? And we're inside IBM company. So that also begs the question of what should IBM's corporate venturing strategy be, right? So I was part of a team and with corporate strategy to look at that. I'm looking at it from the microelectronics perspective, but we needed external innovation. We needed to bring innovation from startups inside. And how are we going to do that? Because that recognition was definitely there that we were not going to do everything inside. And Claudia has done her interview and she talks about that. She talks about how she figured the model out and she would go on to head IBM Venture Capital and figure that part out. So I got out of that. And at the same time, my boss who brought me into IBM called me and said, hey, Swati, I have a great opportunity for you. It has nothing to do with semiconductors, but I'm at a VC. Would you like to join? And that company was SoftBank. SoftBank wasn't as known then as it is now. It was known in the media and internet circles because it had established very good investments. So I thought it was a fantastic opportunity. And the offer was in global portfolio development. SoftBank had a strategy done well in the US with the US fund. And of course, the colleagues that I met there that would go on to have their own funds down the line, et cetera, and be very successful. But we know how the story ends into the market crashed, and we know that's coming, and it crashed very quickly. You know, I was there in the boom and then it bust. So what that meant from the international side, SoftBank International Ventures, on the international side, what it meant is a lot of us were out, unfortunately, out of there, the funds were contracting, and US would contract as well a few years later. So I talked to IBM again. I had kept in touch with them, and they were doing something that was really interesting that none of the other big companies were doing. So we didn't see this from HP or Sun or Oracle, but they were really bringing the top VCs in to tell them about their strategy, their big bets. They're called IBM Big Bets or IBM EBOs. There have been case studies written on IBM EBO, a Harvard case study. So what are the 10-year big bets? Pervasive computing, which is early IoT. Autonomous infrastructure was predecessor to cloud. On-demand computing, cloud, predecessor to cloud. Unstructured data management, what we know today as AI, deep learning. 10-year bets, and where would IBM be investing? And where is it expecting startups to invest and complement? Because they couldn't invest in everything. And from a VC perspective, it was really interesting because you're learning about some of the big technology trends that the big companies are following. And how could you support their strategy with applications or ultimate acquisitions that fill gaps or leverage the IBM services channel for the enterprise startups? That's a dream. Or disrupt IBM. That's, of course, obviously, that's another strategy. But it's a really sort of rich story. And it's not competitive to the VCs. You're not arguing over companies or trying to compete on companies. It's a very complementary strategy, which was very impressive. So IBM, the IBM model by that time, this was after 2000, so it had been formed much more. And so it was completely strategic. So if you think of the model, it's 100% strategic value capture or strategic return. There is no financial investment in individual startups. So what's the job? How do you measure it in that kind of a setup? One is early insight. What's happening in the venture market? Where are the top VCs investing and how can that inform our strategy? That's number one. And so we would have deep dives in all of these areas that I just mentioned and look at the 50 companies in on-demand computing or autonomous infrastructure or pervasive computing and figure out the value chain, figure out which ones were interesting to IBM, where do we think strategic control points were, and really go deep. This is the same thing that the investors do when you do an investment analysis. But the due diligence was different. The due diligence was much more on the partnership and collaboration with IBM. So what did we think was a really strong business case for a collaboration or a gap filler? Or how could we take a company to where it couldn't scale on its own or IBM couldn't address customers on their own without them? That was the due diligence. And that was the business case development and the pitch to the senior execs. It involved a lot of sharp thinking and pitching and convincing your key stakeholders. And all of the IBM staff, the executives are sharp. They really know the tech space. It's different when you're at a company that's not in tech versus when you're at a company in tech and they really do know the startup areas also equally. They're expecting more in terms of what the venture team is going to explain to them. So you really need to be sharp. So that was early insight. And then the other parts were these partnerships. Are you contributing to the software group developing partnerships or the services team developing partnerships and how many you're getting over the goalpost? And IBM was very acquisitive at the time as well. So in the period I was there between 2002 and 2012, I think there were 100 venture-backed startups acquired in that 10-year time period. Because of the time I spent at IBM, I really learned how to influence stakeholders, how to work with the business units, how to really develop your ideas, how to get between a startup and a large company the metrics right so that it's a win. So a lot of those principles of what I would use later at Siemens and National Grid Partners, the foundation, I think, definitely I got at IBM and working with IBM team. The other interesting thing on the team was we had a core team, a venture capital group, but we had dotted line into the business units. So, you know, dotted line people from software, from services, from the different industries reported to Claudia. Whatever work we were doing, one, they were helping us, and it also helped get the work into the business units. It really helps if you have that kind of virtual team or dotted line team help do that and help support the resources of the venture group. Siemens was going to be going through the same kind of transformation as IBM, going from hardware into increasingly into software and services. And if you think about it, at that time in 2012, AI, IoT, cloud, all were coming into the industrial segments, into energy, smart factory, mobility, infrastructure, smart cities. All of those areas, the Siemens areas, were ripe for some of those early technologies to come in and have an influence on those segments and create innovation in those segments. So I thought that was really interesting, the opportunity. I thought the VCs didn't really know Siemens. They know GE, but not really Siemens. And then so Silicon Valley, there's a lot of opportunity to build up sort of the knowledge and work with top VCs and venture-backed startups. I should add that this was not in Siemens Venture Capital. So this was in Siemens Technology to Business, their external innovation team in the CTO office. So that's Siemens Venture Capital, this group in Berkeley, which was about external innovation. So the head wanted to do what IBM was doing in terms of bringing external innovation from startups inside. And so the charter was, how do you build new products with a startup partnership? How do you maybe form new businesses or ideas for new businesses with some kind of startup collaboration? And that's what you were measured on. The engagement with the business unit and the startups. And we were in Silicon Valley. whereas the most of the business units are in Germany. So there's a lot of freedom and necessity for you to do the job. And sometimes that's very challenging, but sometimes it's also a very big opportunity. So I thought, you know, that was really sort of interesting and had a lot of opportunity. The size of the Siemens platform, obviously, are also a $100 billion company, the same kind of size as IBM. So very big in terms of what you could achieve. So I jumped. I went from IBM Ventures into Siemens.
I can see you've done a range of corporate venturing activities, not just TVCs, but also innovation teams. And you have decades of experience, which is very rare for a platform team type of discipline. So maybe one of my questions is, from all this journey, do you find that the professionalization of corporate venturing around getting innovation outside in and your functions, the various functions you have taken, have they matured, have they improved? What are the big trends you've seen?
I still see in the industry and also in the different units that I've gone to, there's still kind of a need for external innovation inside, but maybe the attention less on doing that. So as you look at corporate venture units, I think people are less thinking about, well, how do we really work on the engagement piece and getting that external innovation inside? We talk a lot about investments and we talk about deploying the technologies, but much less about external innovation. There are a lot of efforts around innovation, which are internal innovation, MVP, venture building, but that's inside. But not marrying startup with innovation, which is exactly external innovation, which is we have this need to innovate, we want to do X, and we're going to rely on at least initially some startups to jumpstart that effort. And so we did that. When I talk about National Real Partners, I can talk about how we adapted the initial thinking around innovation to pull in external innovation. External innovation is, if you're a product or services or a technology provider, can you do that with the help of external innovation? Are you not just consume the technologies, not just be a user of the technologies or a customer, but can that be part of the innovation? I started that at IBM, but then Siemens also took it to the next level.
You have a technical background, so I'm going to use the impedance match. Sometimes yeah. I find that there's a requirement to really match the startups that brings innovations and the business groups, and to find not only the right time, but also the right match. And maybe you can share some ideas about how do you get that right? Because this is so delicate in terms of timing, where the startups are on their own journey and the business group have their own strategy. And you worked in such large companies that they have so many teams as well. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I think one of the things is on the business development side, you have to really know what business units are trying to do and the timing of that. When does it become real? You may want to do this in 5 years, but is the timing that you're going to start something in year one? Is it 3 years out? What's the timing? And what is the difference between what you will make in-house and you're not absolutely not willing to go externally for that? So maybe a strategic control point. And what things do you consider are complementary? Because that's a delicate, you have to really know that. What are the boundaries? This is what you're going to do inside and you want to maybe control one part of the solution. And then you're going to take supporting things from the outside. So it's very important to get clear that roadmap and the timing of that roadmap, so you don't waste a lot of time with startups and you can select the startups with those things in mind. Of course, the technology, it goes without saying, you're going to be looking for certain class of technology, a certain type of startup, the field of the startups, number one. But a lot of the tensions or the stumbling blocks come with make versus buy and timing. The timing just isn't right. Yes, maybe those startups exist in the market, but when the business unit is ready to act is not going to be for some time. If we can be clear about that to startups, it doesn't waste their time and their resources.
That's the term catalyst. It implies that you're a necessary element to make it happen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would not happen. And maybe you can share some tips about how, so let's assume that you have found the right intersection between the roadmap and the startup. You still need to find a way to be the catalyst to create the right conditions for that engagement to start well. Any tips you could share with the audience?
I think one thing is to, you have to be the catalyst. So you're not the catalyst. You're in often cases, you're the driver. You are the main driver. I can give you plenty of examples of companies, startups that are in the proximity of a large corporation, but nothing was done with them until the venture team, or in some cases myself, right, came in and started driving it. So I think on the business development side, you have to see whether or not you reside in the BU or you're residing in the venture group. Most commonly, you're residing in the venture group. You have to see yourself as the owner, that it will not happen without you. You need to drive it. And so therefore, as the owner or the driver, you need to evangelize. You need to make the business case. You need to meet with all the stakeholders. You need to pretty much do multiple parts yourself. You have to look at maybe things like procurement and what those cycles are going to be and who's going to own it there and evangelize, but really build the case. It's almost as if you're the startup person inside the company. I've seen some data on this. You're more likely to go further on startup engagements because of that recognition and commitment. I think going back to your question, really sort of engaging the executive team on what's happening so that they understand that there's a number of opportunities. And then two, when you're championing one, you have to think through all the roadblocks and you have to systematically go across the company and start working them and start seeking help from executives to take the barriers down. The first thing I did when I entered Siemens, and I recommend other corporate venture groups do this if they can, I brought in 15 of the business unit CEOs into the valley and the CTO of Siemens, which is a big deal. Siemens is a $100 billion company at the time. So the CTO coming himself with a staff of business unit CEOs is a big deal. And why were they coming? They were coming because they knew software and services and so what's happening in Silicon Valley ultimately would be impacting their business. But they ultimately would have to get into software. They would have to pay attention to software, that their services businesses would be dependent on software, that potentially there's disruption in some of the companies that are working in the Valley. And at that point, they really didn't have a good understanding. And I'm bringing this up because you talked about hurdles to partnership. Before you get to hurdle of partnership, you have to build awareness in the company. And you have to spend some amount of time building awareness, whether you're supporting one business unit or a lot of business units, that because without that awareness, the action is more delayed, right? And you're not ready because you don't know what you don't know. So this a mindset change, I think, for the Siemens execs. We brought them in for 5 days. We had all the top VCs there. So I brought in Steve Jurvetson, SpaceX, Tesla, and his portfolio, very relevant to Siemens. Khosla, AI, energy. Ben Horowitz, Andreessen Horowitz hosted us for half a day. Young Son, who was leading corporate venture at Samsung at the time. This was a real shift in the mindset of the execs. The CTO had been in the Valley before and heard the software is eating the world idea, and he got it. He got it. But in order, again, in a company for things to happen, it's not just one person. You have to disseminate that awareness and knowledge. So he wanted these business units to understand that. And I think they did at the end of that. They saw the amount of innovation. They talked to startup CEOs that were relevant to their sectors. 15 startups we brought in, relevant. That mindset change is what started the process of saying, yes, we need to move. We need to be quicker. We have to do this at a top level. And then that, you know, goes down into the layers of the company once the teams get that.
Are you suggesting to do this? It's a busy event, a workshop. That feels nearly impossible for most people who are just getting started. So how did you manage?
I knew all those VCs. It's not
the easiest firms to get together, right?
No, they're not. See, this was the power of IBM. I told you, we knew all the VCs in the Valley. So it's all my VC connections And there was a desire for the so the one thing is there's a desire for the CTO to do it. He wanted it done. And I raised my hand, right? And it could be a career limiting move, Nicholas. You know, a lot of people shy away from that because you could succeed or it could not be a good agenda.
My next question, which is about the platform team KPIs. Could you give maybe a high level view first on KPIs, which you think are really valuable to know? And then drill down on the one you thought was the most meaningful.
I'll say it depends on the company. It's company specific. I don't know that you can say in general there's one. Because ultimately, again, it goes back, what is the company trying to do? IBM was trying to do partnerships and software and services so we could count the partnerships. That's a KPI.
And how many more on the exploitation, ecosystem building.
How many did you add to the ecosystem? We actually ended up making that number very big. We developed that ecosystem very high. How many acquisitions? How many acquisitions did you influence? Do you find the company, pitch it? There was a partnership, acquisition. That's a KPI. Even on insight, how many decks did you deliver on what's happening in an emerging market? How many talks did you do? How many sort of original piece of thinking and research did you do and deliver?
Inside the mothership, you mean?
Inside the mothership. Inside the mothership.
Golden nugget. I never thought about number of internal presentation.
As I mentioned at IBM, the deep dives were a key building block or framework in IBM Venture Capital Group. That we developed those ourselves. We talked to 50, 60 startups. We created the value chain. So a lot of what you see from CB Insights does today, they do it automatically or pitch book. A lot of that is taken care of. So it's not as hard today. We did a lot of that manually. But that insight into a space that you have created, that's your own work that you can't see published elsewhere because your own insights are into it. That's very valuable for the business units to hear, to understand. That's at IBM. Now, different company. Siemens, we counted how many projects, how many products did you develop? So the idea there was you get product to market.
So there's one thing you mentioned during your introduction I wanted to double click. You mentioned that it's very helpful to have this dotted line between the business group and the CVC. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can share about first the value of this dotted line and how it's best managed.
Yeah, so the value and the case I was talking about was an IBM where we had dotted line into Claudia. The value is you have more resources in the venture team. We have so much work to do in the venture teams and not often the teams are small. So here the business units are giving a resource, they're giving a person and their full-time effort.
Full-time, this is the key.
Full-time effort to support and sit on the staff of the head of ventures. So they don't report directly to ventures, they report to the business unit, but they work full time with you. And so you're expanding, one, the resources of the team. That's one benefit.
The golden nugget, because I've seen CVC where they have this, but it's part time. And then it's always an issue of
priority. It's not that they're doing it when they have time. They're doing it and being measured on it. They're measured, the performance is measured on it. And they happen to sit back with the business unit head on their staff. So they're communicating constantly on the projects and what's happening and driving. If you're doing everything with one startup project and you're the one taking away all the barriers, as I said, well, it's hard to scale that. So you need people. And sometimes people just don't think of it in terms of the corporate venture structure to structure it this way. If you can, if the company can do it this way, it has a lot of value. The other thing it does is it brings the business unit into what we do every day.
And earlier you mentioned about falling in love with a startup, their project. How do you mitigate this bias that comes into it? Because when you pitch these startups for an engagement inside a business group, there's a fine line between your evangelizing and you're starting to pitch like you are the startup. So how do you find the right balance?
Yeah, that's a good question because it's true. In doing this job, whether you're an investor or you're on the business development side, you tend to fall in love with the deal that you really think a lot of. And I think you also do the business units a disservice if you're not pitching something that's going to ultimately be great for them. If you don't have that sharply defined as to why the business will fail or be severely face obstacles if they don't have this company, that is a mediating thing. That makes sure that you are thinking in your own mind, what's the value to the company? Because sometimes we're not, and sometimes you have to drop it. You have to drop it. I mean, a lot of times we love something, wanted to invest in it, or wanted to have a partnership, and we had to drop it because it just wasn't going to happen.
Okay, it has to match. That's back to this impedance match, finding the right time. And if it doesn't, then you can't force it. And so maybe my last question for you is more reflective, but if you could go back in time and tell Swati, just before joining IBM Ventures, one advice, what advice would that have been?
Well, I guess that advice would be, so every company is different in terms of objective. And every market is different. Tech market is different from industrial, is different from energy and utilities. Those are three segments that I've been in. And you have to go at the pace of that business. Disruption also happens in the industrial and energy segments, but maybe longer. And so to build the support, to get people onto your projects and evangelize, you have to take into account the culture and the speed of that industry. And each company is doing something different. So always keep in mind that the objectives of what the company is doing is different. And so you have to adjust accordingly. Yeah, I think that's something, I don't know that I would have given that to me or I would advise people that, but that I think that's something very important to keep in mind.
So I think, Swati, it's a really good way to finish the interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nicholas.